I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a showdown is brewing between Texas and the federal government, and it is time for every state in the union to decide who it will stand with. Plus,
our colleagues across the aisle seem to be working on taking us backward.
A handful of Republican lawmakers in Olympia are handing Democrats unbelievable ammunition in a critical election year. Plus, Bob Ferguson's chicken check saga just won't end. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We're going to start the show in an unusual way today. Typically, we talk about issues that are focused on local and state politics. We're going to go down to the border and what's happening in Texas because I think it's wrong to look at what's happening down there as a Texas issue, as a national news story that we are so far removed from. This is a critical point in the border crisis. And I really feel like there is a showdown looming between the state of Texas and the federal government. I do not know how it is going to end, but every single state in the union needs to decide what side in that fight it is on. In particular, blue states must decide and must speak out if they side with Texas. I will make the argument today that every single one of them should, because as I said, this is not a border issue. This is not a border state issue. This is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. This is about the sanctity of our country. This is about safety. This is about law and order. This is about states' rights versus the federal government's rights. And I cannot understate how much is at stake here. So let me give you a little background since we haven't discussed this issue or the buildup to it on the show at all. I'm sure you're familiar. There was a Supreme Court ruling recently where actually you had some conservative justices that sided with liberals in making this possible. The headline, CBS News, Supreme Court says Biden administration can remove razor wire that Texas installed along the border. It says, while the Biden administration has argued the razor wire impedes border patrol operations, Texas has said it deters migrants from swimming across the Rio Grande to enter the country illegally. Still, groups of migrants routinely crawl underneath the wire to get into the U.S., often cutting themselves in the process. So the Biden administration had sued Texas, went all the way to the Supreme Court to try to get them to remove this razor wire that they had put in. The CBS News article says a lower court ruling last year had barred the federal government from removing the razor wire that the National Guard soldiers deployed by Governor Greg Abbott, assembled on the banks of the Rio Grande near the Texas border town of Eagle Pass, a busy sector for illegal crossings. But in a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court suspended that lower court ruling at the request of the Biden administration, which has argued the razor wire obstructs Border Patrol's ability to process migrants who are already on American soil and to help those who may be in distress. So here you have a situation where the state of Texas, which is dealing with the brunt of this crisis and the brunt of the impacts from illegal immigration, has tried to take it upon itself to fortify its own border with Mexico. They have done that with shipping containers. They have done that by stationing National Guard troops. They have done that with razor wire. Their goal is to stop the illegal crossings in the first place, rather than focus on dealing with the migrants when they get across the border. They believe that they have a right to do that. They believe as a state, and Greg Abbott believes that what they're dealing with under the Constitution is an invasion. And if the federal government is not going to protect them from that, that they have a right to protect themselves. So Governor Greg Abbott has said in response to that ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court that they are not going to back down. His initial response to that ruling was that this is not over. He said Texas's razor wire is an effective deterrent to the illegal crossings Biden encourages. I will continue to defend Texas's constitutional authority to secure the border and prevent the Biden administration from destroying our property. Now, he has gone on to send, he put out this letter stating essentially what they're going to do from here. And this has caused this ripple effect of a lot of, I believe it's 14 at this point, Republican governors saying that they're going to not only stand with Texas, but many of them sending reinforcements to Texas, as Texas, in the eyes of the Biden administration, completely flouts the Supreme Court ruling. So the letter is fairly long. I'm not going to read all of it, but the gist of it is that Governor Greg Abbott believes that the U.S. Supreme Court ruling is not constitutionally sound and that what's happening there constitutes an invasion that they have a right as a state to protect themselves from, essentially by any means necessary, if the federal government is not going to. He wrote in this letter, the federal government has broken the compact between the United States and the states. The executive branch of the United States has a constitutional duty to enforce federal laws protecting states, including immigration laws on the books right now. President Biden has refused to enforce these laws and has even violated them. The result is that he has smashed records for illegal immigration. Despite having been put on notice in a series of letters, one of which I delivered to him by hand, President Biden has ignored Texas's demand that he perform his constitutional duties. Under President Biden's lawless border policies, more than 6 million illegal immigrants have crossed over our southern border in just 3 years. That is more than the population of 33 different states in this country. This illegal refusal to protect the states has inflicted unprecedented harm on the people all across the United States. And then he gets into sort of the constitutional aspect of this. I want to read part of it because there's a clip coming up that will dive into this further. I also, I've read the Federalist Papers, and this whole issue of states' rights versus federal rights is sort of inherent to the founding of our country. So he goes on in this letter to say, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and the other visionaries who wrote the U.S. Constitution foresaw that states should not be left to the mercy of a lawless president who does nothing to stop external threats like cartels smuggling millions of illegal immigrants across the border. That is why the framers included both Article 4, Section 4, which promises that the federal government shall protect each state against an invasion. So bottom line is he's saying we're under attack. The federal government's not protecting us. We're going to protect ourselves. And so there's been a lot of video going around on social media. I've also been paying attention to what our friend Allie Bradley, who's a wonderful border correspondent for News Nation, is putting out there because I just consider her one of the most, if not the most reliable source of what's happening at the border. But Texas is like, kick rocks in so many words. And they are not backing down the Texas National Guard. They are not going to stop putting up razor wire, replacing razor wire. So the question is, how is the federal government going to respond? And now there are multiple states at current count today. I think there's 14. But as I said earlier, these are Republican states. And I actually don't think that has much of an impact. I mean, they can send people to reinforce what Greg Abbott is doing. But if the federal government comes in and let's say, as Beto O'Rourke is asking for, that the federal government federalize the Texas National Guard and essentially take them over. So a couple of the states that have and the governors that have come in, Virginia, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Montana, Florida, Glenn Youngkin in Virginia said Virginia stands with Texas. Greg Abbott is doing the job Joe Biden and his border czar refused to do to support our border. Christy Noem in South Dakota, Greg Abbott is exactly right to invoke Texas's constitutional authority to defend itself. Governor Pelin in Nebraska, the failure to secure our border has created a massive flow of illegal drugs, national security and terrorism risk, and a humanitarian crisis. I was proud to order Nebraska State Troopers and National Guard to the border last year, and Nebraska is proud to stand with Texas now, so you get it. The issue is, I will say, that blue states are saying nothing. And I truly believe that today, and this is why I'm starting with this story today, because it's actually blue state governors like ours who could have the biggest impact on ending the border crisis immediately. If you have blue state governors who have never uttered a word, a bad word about the president when it comes to his border security policies, if you have governors like Gavin Newsom, Jay Inslee, if you have Gretchen Whitmer, if you have Kathy Hochul in New York, who come out today and say, we stand with Texas, the border crisis will be over in a month. It'll be over in a month. There is nothing stopping them from doing that besides partisan politics. We're not talking about turning away people who have a lawful asylum claim. We're not talking about turning away every single migrant. We are talking about stopping the bleeding, stopping the hemorrhaging, stopping people from doing something that is illegal under federal law. And to think that the Biden administration would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to get Texas to remove razor wire that is there to prevent people from making illegal crossings into this country. Now, you might say, well, what's in it for Inslee? What's in it for Gavin Newsom? What's in it for Kathy Hochul? A lot. There's a lot in it for them, and there's a lot at stake. You have seen New York. You've seen the mayor of Chicago. And even in Washington State, we have areas that are overrun with migrants so much so that their resources for other crises like the homeless crisis are being stretched thin. We're seeing that happen in South King County. The governor of New York, and certainly in New York City, the mayor there, has come out and said, we don't know what to do. They're closing schools to house migrants. The very far left progressive mayor of Chicago says the federal government needs to help us. But they have yet to acknowledge that the best way they can help them is to stop more migrants from coming in while we get a handle on things and to fix the situation at the southern border. So you can expedite. You know, when you get thousands of people coming in every week, you get a few of them in there that have legitimate asylum claims that we have, that's part of who we are as a country. But when you mix that handful of legitimate asylum claims with thousands of people who have no legitimate claim, and then people who could get their asylum cases heard quickly are being given court dates for 5 years down the road, that's not fair to them. That's not fair to the people who come into this country under a legally allowed method. And so just not only continuing to allow the unlawful entries, but actually actively stopping a state like Texas from taking it upon itself to try to secure the border further is a really crazy thing. But when I said that blue states have a lot, they have a lot to lose. And that is, you're going to continue to see this influx. You're not going to have the money to be able to deal with this influx of migrants. But you have yet to acknowledge, I would say this of Governor Inslee, of Gavin Newsom, and of most of the blue state governors who are critical of what has happened in Texas and, you know, what has happened in some of the other red states along the border. They refuse to acknowledge that that border crisis is killing people today on our streets in Washington. Today, likely as we speak, someone is dying with a needle in their arm from fentanyl that was brought here from Mexico. So you have these Democratic governors who claim to care about the drug crisis, but their actions show otherwise. They claim to care about, you know, migrants who come here seeking asylum, yet their actions show otherwise because they're allowing with their silence those cases to get lost in a system that is completely overburdened. If blue state governors said something, the border crisis would be over in a month. That's true. It's so hard to wrap your mind around the continued silence for the sake of political expediency when there are so many detrimental impacts that are unfolding right before our eyes. And I realize that it is a pipe dream to expect that someone like Jay Inslee, like someone like Gavin Newsom, will come out and say, I stand with Texas. I understand that, but if you don't stand with Texas today, there's going to be no one standing with us tomorrow when that border crisis is spilling out onto our streets and we have no money to deal with it and people are dying in record numbers because of the drugs that came along with it. So it is at your own peril, Governor Inslee and other Democratic governors, that you do not stand by Texas today. And if there were anybody watching and listening who had even the smallest bit of influence on Governor Inslee, what a remarkable, memorable thing that would be for him to do in the final months of his final term in office, to do something, maybe for the first time ever in 12 years, where he stands up for what's right, he does something, political ramifications be damned, and he actually does something that could save lives. It would change change a lot about my opinion of the governor if he could muster that here in his final days in office. I'm not going to hold my breath. But gosh, blue state governors, they could save our country right now. And I just wish they had the political will to do it. Okay, coming up next, on the show yesterday, we played Jonathan Cho with Dave Reichert, a Republican candidate for governor, out at some homeless encampments. Really good insight into not only seeing the crisis firsthand, but also hearing what a Republican governor, we haven't had one in 40 years, would do. Jonathan Cho also went out with Semi Byrd, another Republican candidate for governor. We promised we'd play that story today, so we're going to do that coming up next. But first, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I said yesterday that I lost 37 pounds, and that's a good thing because I was starting to look like the Penguin from Batman because I gained all my weight in my upper body. But I continue to get texts from people who are either just starting the maintenance phase where they've lost 30 to 40 pounds and now they're maintaining it. And I love that sort of relationship of being able to offer encouragement. And so if you're on the program right now, please reach out to me. Let me know how it's going, good or bad. Let me know how you're at so I can offer you advice and encouragement. And Dr. Ryan Coogan and the team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, that's one of the great things about this program. You've got a handy app. It encourages you every step of the way. If you fall off, you're not entering things in your app, you're going to get a call from them like, hey, what's going on? And I think having someone that you are accountable to is really, really helpful. So if you're looking to lose some excess weight and lose it quickly, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is the ticket. It is not another fad diet. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, yesterday on the show, we played a story that our friend Jonathan Cho, who is reporting for the Discovery Institute, put out there. He invited gubernatorial candidates to come out with him. I mean, he covers the homeless crisis. He's in the trenches of the homeless crisis day in and day out. And he thought, hey, come see this. Come see what I see. And then let's hear about their ideas for how they would deal with this, because obviously the current governor isn't dealing with it at all. Here's a little clip of his, I would call it a walk-along, not really a ride-along, a walk-along with Dave Reichert.
They're suffering from, again, substance abuse or mental illness. And we expect them to make a decision that is in their best interest. That's not going to happen. We've enabled people to be homeless. We just give them needles. We give them condoms. We give them aluminum foil to do their drugs, and then we drive away.
Yeah, true. And it's almost funny that it's so weird hearing, like, our governor would never admit that. He would never admit that harm reduction is a problem and that you're actually helping expedite their death by providing them with these things where they continue to take. You know, it's like the clean needle thing. I just have to say this before we get to Jonathan Cho with Semi Byrd. It's like, oh, we don't want to get an infection. Okay, so you're more worried about them having an infection in their arm from a dirty needle than you are about the deadly drug they're using, a dirty or a clean needle, to inject into their bodies that can easily kill them. Yeah, very, very empathetic you are. Really weird type of empathy. Jonathan Cho also took some time to go out with Semi Byrd, another Republican candidate for governor. Here's his report.
We'll raise them up from poverty and despair, and we will all be better for it. In God's name, we serve.
Yes. Come on, guys. Cover it. This is my brother.
You've got downtown Seattle right there. You've got the stadiums, and then you have this madness.
Yeah.
What do you make of what you're seeing right now here in Seattle?
It's hypocrisy. Because if you have a playoff game, the people in charge, those politicians, will move them from here.
But they came right back.
And they come right back. And again, drive businesses out.
Learning the truth can be scary and uncomfortable.
This is a drug and mental health crisis right now that is fueling this. Plain and simple.
Because of fentanyl, it hinders their opportunity of getting into transitional housing. So we make sure that we get them to detox.
And they don't need needles or more resources. They need to get clean. They need to break the bonds of addiction.
Give this man his strength. Joshua 1:9, be strong.
I have skin in the game. I lost my blood, my family, to fentanyl addiction. I love my nephew. We had resources. We could give him anything. Dominic would come over to the house and we would have to worry, did Dominic take something to sell to pay for his drug? So Dominic had all the support he needed, but it was the addiction that captured him.
Every one of you been anointed to heal the brokenhearted, to open eyes of blind and set the captives free.
If you stop and think about someone coming off the streets and trying to get clean from addiction, we don't have the infrastructure. We are going to utilize our state resources, and we have the National Guard, not to come out in the streets, but to use our engineers to create an encampment outside of the city and build the infrastructure that we need. We have drug treatment therapists. We have mental health therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists. We have medical doctors. We can bring those resources to these folks.
If you become governor, are you going to require mandates for treatment?
100%. 100%, because again, we have to save them.
So if they refuse your offers for treatment and to get their lives back, what are you going to do then?
It is accountability. So the law is the law. Washington State, we have a lawlessness epidemic as well. People refuse to enforce the law. And I am someone, again, who has lost my own flesh and blood to this. And if we had brought Dominic off the streets, whether he wanted to or not, he would have had a choice. A program where you can get clean into safety with a roof over their head and treatment. Or if they want, they can violate the law, but they're going to be held accountable.
And that's Bob Ferguson. Bob.
Do you know where Bob Ferguson stands in all this?
Bob Ferguson stands directly with Jay Inslee. The baton has been passed. Bob Ferguson has been the enforcement arm of the Inslee policy and platforms. That has been destructive for Washington State.
We got to figure it out.
It's about love. It's about compassion. And it's about never forgetting or giving up on one another. We are here united to bring that love. Compassion is never forgetting that these are our brothers and sisters. We need homes, but we need treatment-based mental health clinics. We need to build the infrastructure to get people out of despair. This is about not only doing something here today, but moving forward and ending this. This needs to stop.
Yeah, Jonathan Cho reporting there for Discovery Institute, checking out the homelessness crisis with Sammy Byrd, a Republican candidate for governor. By the way, you should follow Jonathan Cho at Cho Show on X. You can also check out what they're doing at fixhomelessness.org. He just pumps out content nonstop. I don't know how he sleeps. So Cho reached out to Bob Ferguson as well, Bob Ferguson's office. They did at least respond and say, hey, we'll keep you up to date, but he doesn't have any encampment visits planned so far. There's nothing that Bob Ferguson could say or do on in a story with Jonathan Cho that would convince me that he is capable of dealing with the homeless crisis. He's just Jay Inslee 2.0. And what have I always said? Cannot trust someone to fix a problem when they cannot properly identify what the cause of the problem is. So when you're saying housing, you've lost me. I already know that you're not capable of fixing it. So really good work from Jonathan Cho. One of the things I love about the stories that he puts out there is they're just raw. It's not someone like a talking head lady, you know, just sharing how it went and just talking over the whole thing. It's just letting it play out, you know, letting the candidates speak, etc. So really good stories. If you missed the Dave Reichert one, we played it on the show yesterday, but you can also catch it on Jonathan's Twitter account at Cho Show. We love featuring his reporting when we can. All right, coming up next, a double dose of unbelievable, and I'm going to go on a rager of a rant against Republicans that I'm sure I'll get some nasty comments for, but I just don't care. I know that even if you disagree with me, you'll still love me. And if you don't love me, you love Nicole, and we really only need you to love one of us. But first, I have been preaching the First Mark Challenge because there's no downside to it. First Mark Insurance has been in the insurance business for a long time locally. It's owned by Dave Taylor. He's the CEO. He's a Marine veteran, which I just love the guy. He's great. But he has a great team over at First Mark as well. And they offer this service free of cost. And particularly right now, insurance companies are dropping people left and right for making even the smallest claims. And if you don't have an insurance broker in your corner to help you navigate that process, it can be really time consuming and it can be really cumbersome and, yes, expensive to try to find insurance once you've been dropped from a plan. Again, here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right, for a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, so not only is it good to have someone like FirstMark in your corner, but also they're going to do a full assessment of your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs. Mike and I got better insurance for the same price. No brainer. We just heard from a woman the other day who said that she's saving $100 a month using FirstMark insurance, and you never pay them a dime for any of this. So a really good service to add, especially if you're trying to cut back or try to save some money, but still need obviously good insurance. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Have someone in your corner helping you navigate today's complex insurance environment. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The best part is they work for you. Okay, two unbelievable segments today. One has to do with my least favorite summer of my entire life, and that is the summer of law. The city of Seattle settling with a large group of protesters for $10 million. Let's talk about it. I mean, flashback to 2020, the summer of love. We had a lot that happened that summer. I mean, there were the really bad riot downtown where the cop cars were lit on fire and all the stores were looted. And then, of course, there was CHOP. And there was the eight nights, I believe it was, that led up to CHOP and these face-off between the Seattle Police Department in Capitol Hill outside the East Precinct, East Precinct, and all of these protesters. And, you know, things got heated during those nights. Every night that passed, there was a lot of munitions used, you know, tear gas, things like that. And you saw immediately the left Seattle media act as if police were completely out of control, vilify them, and that led the police to feel so much pressure that they just abandoned the area entirely, which was ridiculous and stupid. And I still can't believe no one was held accountable for doing that. And so it led to what became known as, first it was CHAZ, and then it was CHOP, the Capitol Hill Occupied Protest, six blocks of the city, taken over by criminal rioters, including a police precinct, making the businesses there live in a state of hell for a month, as well as the surrounding residents. I saw a lot of stuff that summer. And when I think of the worst of what I saw that summer, the worst of what I saw came from the rioters, by far, who lit cop cars on fire, who ruined businesses big and small, who used the protest as an excuse to loot stores and steal, who lit construction trailers on fire, who assaulted journalists, including yours truly, who assaulted police officers, throwing little explosive devices at them, who tried to murder police officers by cementing a precinct door shut and lighting the building on fire, who firebombed the Seattle police precinct. I mean, need I go on to tell you about the kind of people we're dealing with here, who shut down I-5, created a dangerous situation that resulted in two protesters being hit by a vehicle, one of them dying. So anyway, these absolutely entitled, because that's the environment we've given them, to feel entitled to do any of this with no consequences. So of course, they go sue the city, and of course, the city backs down rather than fight this case in court, which they should have. They're back down and they've settled with this group of protesters for $10 million. You're kidding me. $10 million. It says, this is from Como News. Seattle settles lawsuit filed by 2020 protesters against city and police for $10 million. The lawsuit was filed by 50 people who were protesting in Seattle in the wake of George Floyd's murder and other Black Lives Matter rallies around the country. The plaintiffs were represented by the law firm Strittmatter, Kessler, Kohler, Moore. In a statement Wednesday, the law firm said in part, among the 50 peaceful protesters was Abriana Inda, who was standing still peacefully when a blast ball was launched directly at her chest, striking her and causing her to go into cardiac arrest. Kel Murphy, who was piled on by a group of officers for putting a sticker on a concrete barricade, resulting in seizure and coma. A teenager whose finger was partially blown off. A disabled vet with a cane who was gassed and tackled because he didn't retreat fast enough. A reporter who was sitting down resting when a blast ball was tossed at her. And dozens of others who suffered permanent hearing loss, broken bones, concussions, wounds, bruising, and emotional damage, including PTSD. before I get to the city's statement, which is stupid, all of those things they mentioned. Now, do I think that there are probably, I've covered probably 100 protests or more in my career in Seattle, going back to the Occupy days and then into May Day. I've been hit with blast balls. I've been pepper sprayed and gassed. And I have also been hit in the stomach with a police baton. But never did it cross my mind that I should sue them as a member of the media who was in the scrum. And it always, you know, because in that moment, they're not differentiating. You have a crowd of 500 people, and some of them are engaged in criminal behavior. Some of them are engaged in violence against the police. And I'm sorry, but if you stay in that crowd, you are then engaged in a criminal riot. Because if you didn't want to be part of that, you should have left. It is incredibly difficult for police in the moment to, oh, here's a crowd of 100 people. This person's breaking the law. We've got somebody in there hurling stuff at us, frozen water bottles. Like, let's try to figure out who that is. No, you're going to ask the whole crowd to leave. And when they don't, you're going to go in or you're going to use pepper spray to clear the area. I'm not saying their response to 2020 was perfect. But again, this is that whole excusing what these rioters were doing by saying that, oh, these people, they had a part of a finger blown off. One of them was gassed and tackled. They have permanent hearing loss, broken bones, concussions. What about the protesters who threw explosive devices at police? I sat down with officers who had serious injuries, who suffered serious injuries during the summer of 2020. What about the rioters who tried to kill police officers? What about the mob that forced my crew and I to seek refuge in a fire station? Where are the consequences for them? Easily, all of those protesters who are now complaining about injuries they suffered could have or did inflict injuries on other people as well. I don't buy the idea in the slightest that you're talking about 50 peaceful protesters. Now, if you could prove individually, on an individual basis, that some of them committed no criminal acts, and you had video or whatever it is, like, I think there was it might have been this reporter where they truly were sitting there and it's like, really, did you hurl that at them on purpose? So I think in this group, there were a couple where they had legitimate claims that the police were either targeting them or acted, you know, so recklessly that they ended up hurting someone. But to just say wholesale 50, here's a check for $10 million, which is like $200,000 per person. You know who one of the protesters is? It's Ian Golash. One of the protesters is that's getting this fat payday from the taxpayers is Ian Golash, that Seattle public school teacher who failed one of his students for saying that only males have penises, who has pro-Hamas posters outside his classroom, who was harassing members of the media during a protest in 2021 where he followed his students into the King County jail to have a protest and has done a variety of other things, said Hamas never raped anybody. Your tax dollars are cutting him a check for $200,000 probably. That's wild stuff. The city of Seattle, Ann Davison, said this decision was the best financial decision for the city, considering risk, cost, and insurance. The case has been a significant drain on the time and resources of the city and would have continued to be so throughout an estimated 3-month trial that was scheduled to begin in May. Meanwhile, you know, we've got our pending public records lawsuit against the city, and they're all like trying to get it dismissed at every single corner. And I don't want some fake payout from the city just to go away. We want to get to the bottom of what happened there. And it's like the city of Seattle, look, I get it that you're going to talk about costs, but somewhere these criminal demonstrators, and it's the same people over and over, they have to be shown that there are consequences to their actions. A $200,000 check from the taxpayers does not show them that there are consequences to their actions. It is utterly absurd. And it's only going to make things worse. And you know what? You're now going to have protesters who look, because they're all living in their freaking parents' basements. And you're now going to have protesters who look to cause some sort of disturbance with the police so they can turn around and sue the city and hope that the city gives them some sort of settlement. The only good thing that could come of this, maybe Ian Golash quits his job teaching kids because now
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Yeah. Take the money and run, Ian.
And I'm take the we money just gave and them run. All a down payment on houses, so they might not have to live in the basements anymore.
They're going to spend it on avocado toast and Antifa stickers.
Umbrellas.
And ninja umbrellas and ninja costumes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ridiculous. Okay. The Senate Majority Leader in Olympia, Andy Billig, is doing his best, I think, to turn Washingtonians against Republicans. And I think he's doing it in a way that is not fair. However, Republicans are absolutely handing him the ammunition he needs. Let's get to it in a double dose of unbelievable. Democratic leaders had a media scrum, as they usually do during the legislative session. Both sides will occasionally, usually weekly, get together and talk to the media about what's happening. Andy Billig, who's the Senate Majority Leader, so the ranking Democrat in the Senate, he really wants to paint Democrats as the saviors of the state, which isn't a surprise. He's a Democrat. Of course, they're going to act like they're saving the state. And he wants to paint Republicans and anyone who supported these six initiatives that the legislature is contending with as just people who want to go backward. Here's a clip.
Our whole goal since we took back the majority, our goal this session, last session, is about taking Washington forward. And when you look at all of the policy areas and we're trying to focus on helping the people of Washington State, and our colleagues across the aisle seem to be working on taking us backward.
So that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I, by no measurable standard, have Democrats who've had the majority of trifecta for eight legislative sessions, who've had the governor's office for 40 years, by no means could you tell me today that the state has moved forward in a positive way on virtually anything. Name something. Even if you say environmental issues, just because you're trying to help the environment doesn't mean you are actually helping the environment. And that's not coming from me. That's from King 5 News. It says you guys don't miss, you miss all your goals that you set. And some things are worse, like carbon emissions and recycling. So to sit there and say, oh, we're the ones who are moving the state forward. And the minority party that doesn't have control over anything, that they cannot pass a bill on their own, that they're moving the state backward, but they have no power and they haven't for some time. Help me understand how that makes sense. All of the worst crises facing our state, cost of living, homelessness, substance abuse, mental health, public safety or lack thereof, it's all attributable to Democrats. And I challenge anyone who disagrees with me to a debate. Because you can't, Republicans can't do anything. I don't know how many times I have to say that. I don't know how you get that in the heads of voters. That, like, they're going to try to get you to blame Republicans, but they've been in power. They're in control. Now, on the initiatives that he says is going to take the state backward, on all of these things and all of these investments, no one is saying you can't invest in those things. What they're saying is you can't invest in them by taking money in the way that you're taking it. You can't invest in those things like your Climate Commitment Act. You can make investments to help the climate, sure. We're not arguing with that. What we're arguing with is that you shouldn't be able to do it at the expense of working class Washingtonians who can't afford to put gas in their car anymore. You got to get more creative than that. Like, you can fund all these programs, you have plenty of money, but you can't do it with a capital gains tax that's illegal and that discourages entrepreneurship and successful businesses from investing in the state that makes it economically successful. That's all we're saying. So that's gaslighting. That's fear-mongering. And it's just flat out lying to people. Now, he continued, and this is where I'm going to absolutely shame. One of those days. What's the word I'm looking for, Nicole? Shame. I'm going to get real sanctimonious on Republicans today. Okay. The issue is, he can say all that, and it's like, well, that's not believable, and you can have these arguments. But he has sort of a Trump card in his back pocket.
You see it at the national level, at the federal level, where it's about rolling back reproductive rights, rolling back, you know, undermining Social Security or Medicare. And the same thing is happening in Washington State. You see with those initiatives, trying to roll back child care investments, K-12 investments, climate action, and then on choice. And I've heard my Republican colleagues say, no, don't worry. In Washington State, everything is safe. But the introduction sheets are littered with bills from our Republican colleagues that would limit reproductive rights, that would take away the right to choose. This year, those bills have been introduced, And so it's as important as ever that we keep focused not just on protecting the rights that Washington citizens have now, but continuing to move forward with all of the legislation that we're working on this session.
So he says Republicans are trying to take us backward, and he uses that Trump card of abortion, that they're trying to erode at the federal level and the state level this session abortion rights. And I heard that and I thought, no, they're not. I thought there's no way they are. There's no way that they are dumb enough to introduce any sort of bills in such a critical election year that have any freaking thing in the world to do with abortion. So I went online and I was making texts and I said, is he just making this up? There's no way they're introducing bills to limit abortion rights. Well, what do you freaking know? You have a handful, and I will call it a handful, because it's like five of the same Republican lawmakers who've got their tentacles on most of these bills. And, you know, I have to separate, because I've said I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice up to the point of fetal viability. And I know there are a lot of you who disagree with me on that. That's fine. I'm going to continue to make my point. In Washington state, there is no point, before I get to, I'm going to talk about the details of these bills. There's no point in introducing a bill as a Republican that would limit or restrict abortion rights in any way. It is never going to pass. You're in the minority. And I get it that you firmly believe in these things and you're there as a lawmaker and you have constituents who believe in these things too. But it's never going to pass. And the consequences of doing this are profound, because you are giving people like Senator Andy Billig the ammunition he needs to fearmonger voters into shying away from change in the state of Washington. Perhaps the only year we've had in 40 years where we could actually elect a Republican governor and get a little bit of balance back to the state. And you have Republicans in the Senate introducing an act relating to prohibiting abortion on the basis of Down syndrome, an act relating to sex selection abortion, so prohibiting abortion based on the fact that somebody just doesn't like the gender of the child. Now, I think I'm in support of both of those things. I also wouldn't be in favor of, and am not in favor of, and this is where the whole pro-choice, pro-life thing, it's not as simple as that. I also don't think it's right to say, oh, I'm having a boy, abort it. I just don't think that that's a genuine reason to abort a child. I also don't think, personally, from my perspective, that if I found out my child had Down syndrome, that my decision would be to abort him. I don't think that those are the big, scary, like, six-week abortion ban things that are happening at the federal level or in other states, that Senator Andy Billig is trying to draw parity there. Some other bills that have been introduced by Republicans, and some of these were from last session, but they've had them reintroduced this session. An act relating to ensuring abortion safety by providing that only physicians may perform abortions and inform women of their right to be fully informed on the inherent risks, which is just like jargon for like, hey, we want doctors to have to do things that make women like think twice about having an abortion. Let's see. And then it has, I mean, there's a list of bills, and I want to say it's like six or seven total. There's also one over on the House side. None of them are inherently like, hey, let's limit the time frame in which women can get abortion. But you do have bills that they've introduced that would limit the circumstances under which women can get an abortion. There's also one of those ultrasound bills where it's like almost sort of not making the woman look at the ultrasound, but making sure the doctor offers her an option to look at the ultrasound before she chooses to do an abortion. So these aren't like the world's most controversial abortion-related bills, but they are so utterly stupid nonetheless. And I don't think I know some of the lawmakers who've introduced these bills. I don't think they're stupid, but I think that they are doing this because they firmly believe in it, but at the expense of bigger things. And you might say, Brandy, there's no bigger thing than a child's life, than the sanctity of life. And I understand, and I'm not trying to diminish that at all. But them proposing these bills doesn't change that. It doesn't change the law in Washington. These bills are never going to get a hearing. They're never going to see the light of day. So you're really just doing it to make a point at the expense of a lot of other things that you can fix. You know, there are other laws out there that Republicans could fix if they had a little more power and a little more control. There are laws out there right now that are killing. We just talked about a story involving the death of a three-week-old child because lawmakers and their infinite wisdom and one-party rule in this state decided to make it easier to give infant kids back to drug users and drug abusers. So this is so frustrating to me This is so frustrating to me in this election year because you're giving, I can't tell Andy Billig, I can't say Senator Andy Billig is lying, he's making it up. Because yeah, he can point to these bills and say, hey, look, they are trying to restrict a woman's right to choose. Even knowing what the Roe v. Wade situation did to Republicans in 2022 when they should have had a banger of an election year. There are so many other, there are lives that you can save for real. Because these aren't going anywhere. But if you can get a Republican in the governor's office, if you can stop some of these wild bills that erode public safety, that, you know, are going to let violent criminals out early, that restrict the ability of police to pursue dangerous suspects who have gone on to kill people, you can either be in a position to change some things, or you can be in a position to change nothing. And bills like this put you in a position to change nothing because it gives Democrats exactly enough to bury you. This is nonsense. Phil Fortunato, Senator Mike Patton, Senator Shelley Short, I get it. I'm not telling you not to believe in what you believe in. But you are doing it at the expense of being able to make a difference in other areas. And I would highly advise against it. Although in these cases, it's too late. All right. Coming up next, we'll have our segment Florida Report with my sister and my mom's visiting her. Must be nice to have two cruise girls down at the beach and me just sitting here doing nothing. You're mouthing something at me. Is everything okay? Oh, thanks.
The poll.
I was angry. I forgot our poll. She's over there like, like, what? Yeah, we did this on our daily subscriber poll, which, again, it's a tough one to sort of poll you on because there's a lot of different ways you can feel about these bills. I gave, for instance, the example of the two bills, that one that would prohibit abortion because you find out your child has Down syndrome, the other one that would prohibit abortion because you're not getting the gender you want, which is just awful. I mean, that's just a terrible thing. And so I asked, which statement best characterizes how you feel about those bills? You're opposed to the bills, you support the bills, or you support the bills, but Republicans shouldn't be introducing them for the reasons or whatever reasons you have. But my thought on that is like, yeah, in principle, do I support like the abortion, you know, restricting abortion based on gender? Yeah. But I also think it's far more detrimental to propose it. So right now, this might be like my most split poll ever. It's like 30-30-30 down the line of opposed, in support, or Republicans ought not bother. Harold Burns says, Republicans have bigger fish to fry from a legislative perspective. Focus on spending, focus on homelessness, focus on mental health, focus on public safety. For the love of God and all things holy, please focus on things you have a snowball's chance in Hades of impacting and stop pandering to the base. If you insist at tilting at windmills, how about trying to limit the government's emergency powers? Harold sounds like me, for the love of God and all things holy. That is definitely a me line. Kathleen says, the obsession with controlling women's health care is preventing the Republicans from winning more races. Abortion has become the litmus test for many voters. Republicans are supposed to be for less government interference. Raising a child with special needs can be very difficult. It's a personal choice. And I understand that. And that's kind of where I'm at, like, with a personal choice. Would I do it? Would I abort a child because I found out they had Down syndrome? No. Would I abort a child because I was really hoping for a boy and it happened to be a girl? Absolutely not. That's ridiculous. But proposing those bills doesn't get them anywhere. It doesn't get us anywhere. Let me see here. Are people angry at me on YouTube yet?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, maybe the one show this year that I've been really hard on Republicans. The white Samuel L. Jackson says, not a fan of 49 or 51% of the population telling the other half they are wrong and criminals. Yeah, I agree with that as well. Let me see what I got going on X on my poll today. Just so many places. Steven Shoot says, the pro-life movement is largely virtue signaling for conservatives. There is no chance in modern America that abortion will be meaningfully restricted for any extended length of time. Even where bans have happened, people just drive across state lines when they want it done. And that's the other thing. Let's just say that you did succeed in passing a bill that said you cannot abort a child because it has Down syndrome. Then a woman's just going to tell a doctor, I'm not ready for a baby. Because you can abort a child if you're just not ready for a baby.
Right.
They would never, they wouldn't say. They might be thinking it. It's because they have Down syndrome. They just wouldn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets around that bill lickety split. Same thing with, you're not going to tell a doctor, I want an abortion because the child's a girl. You're just going to come up with some other reason. So the bill, it doesn't mean anything.
Admin Scott J says losing an election is better than compromising morals. That's his.
I get it. But you can hold those morals and understand that introducing those bills doesn't get you anywhere. If we were in a situation in Washington State where they were introducing bills like that and they had a potential to pass, fine. By all means, do your thing. They don't have any chance in hell of passing. So you can signal where you're at, morally speaking, on the issue of abortion and on the sanctity of life. Like, I have no issue in the world, and I have no issue with these lawmakers believing in those things. Because like I said, a couple of them, they do seem rational to me. But I'm again, just trying to explain how you're doing that at the expense of other really strong moral stances that you're trying to take on things that you'll never be in a position to influence because you've taken such a hard stand on this one thing. We have, as I said, children dying today because of policies Democrats have put in place that a Republican majority or even divided government would have prevented. So you can try to save the life, you can spin your wheels trying to save the life of unborn children, which is never going to happen in this state, unfortunately. Or you can take meaningful steps to put yourself in a position to save the lives of people who are dying today because of the pro-crime policies of Democrats. That's the choice. One avenue, you save no lives. You save none. The other avenue, you might just save some. And I think that's the way you have to look at that decision. But thank you for your opinion. All right. Okay. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. If you are thinking about putting your home on the market, 2024 just might be the year for you. Certainly with the Fed indicating it might drop interest rates, that's going to be a better time to put your home on the market because you're going to have more potential buyers. You're going to get better offers. Wes Jones said he does predict that the market is going to heat up fairly quickly in 2024 if those cuts come to fruition.
Well, my expectation is that rates are going to come down. The Fed is telling us they are going to. It is an election year. I would have expected that to happen, even if the Fed wasn't talking about it. And if it wasn't interest rates, it'd be something else. It'd be tax credits, first-time tax credits, something, you know, something else, some other type of incentive to spark housing because, you know, come November, they're going to want people feeling good about the economy. And, you know, I listened to, you know, Zach Abraham, you know, one of your other guys, really smart dude. And, you know, he has concerns about the economy, you know, that are not going to be controllable. But what can you control? You can control housing to a certain degree. And if they can put pressure down on interest rates, allow more transactions to happen, it's going to make people feel better.
Yeah, so get a head start, though. If you're even contemplating it at some point in 2024, selling your home, get in touch with Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com today. He's going to put you through a free market analysis so you know how well your home is positioned based on where you're selling it, et cetera. And then he can talk to you about some of the other services they offer, like the Listing Boost Concierge Service. Let's say you need some cosmetic updates to your home. He can take over that project for you entirely, so you don't have to worry about anything. They can even help you pay for it up front. And then you just settle up at closing, which I think is such an awesome service. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, a lot happening in Florida. Florida got its governor back. It is time for our weekly segment with my sister Miranda. We call it Meow Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. You know what I'm super disappointed by?
Tell me.
Our mother is outside that room right now with you, and she refuses to come on camera.
I know. She said that she didn't have her hair and makeup ready.
Mom! Mom, that's ridiculous. The people want to see you.
I know.
Yeah, that's such a bummer. Okay. DeSantis is obviously a big story. You got your governor back. Will he be the governor he once was, or is he going to continue to focus on the national issues?
I personally hope he goes back to the governor that he was when he was initially elected, the one that was really focused on the health of the Everglades, the health of our beaches, and a lot more like Florida and Floridian-based issues and topics, because for the last year or so, he's been pretty aimed at, as we all know, some of those mass, the topics the masses are interested
in. Social issues and, yeah.
Yeah, stuff that really just doesn't make any difference in our state. And we have a lot of issues down here, and we're kind of happy to have him back. Some Republicans are a little nervous about him being back because they're worried that he's going to have like some wrath against them for supporting Trump and not him while he was out running for president. But I watched a news conference of him today where he didn't even talk about his run or backing out of the race. He just was back talking. He was at a ribbon cutting for some stormwater treatment plants, back talking about the health of the Everglades, Florida stuff. And that's kind of what I look forward to hearing a little bit more from him on a local level.
Yeah, I mean, he is an exceptional governor. I think he has been. There's even Democrats who, I mean, they, you know, don't like him on the social issues, but who have acknowledged some of the things that he's done for the environment down there, et cetera. So I like some of that. I mean, we just talked in a previous segment about how he's, you know, saying Florida stands with Texas with its fight against the federal government to secure its border. But that, to me, isn't a national issue. That is a state issue, and that impacts every single state in the union. So I'm glad to see him speaking out about that. Speaking of the wrath of possible wrath of Ron DeSantis. So, you know, he concedes and he backs Trump, but he was still a little salty. You know, he still like got his little zings in about the former president. Meanwhile, there are some Republicans in Florida who want to have the taxpayers foot some of Trump's legal fees. But DeSantis, and this came out a day after he conceded, he's like, not on my watch.
Yeah, absolutely not. He said something like, good thing the person who holds the veto pen doesn't agree or something like that. And I'm so glad that he feels that way, because as a taxpayer, I don't think that that's anything that I want my tax money going towards. We have so many other things. And honestly, I can't even believe there was enough Republicans in this state that it even became like a topic of conversation. It's insane to me.
Yeah, and the guy has a lot of money. He can pay his own legal fees. And I don't think some people, and I saw some Trump Republicans who were saying that DeSantis tweeted that about the veto pen because he's sour. No, because he's a conservative governor. And I would hope that any conservative governor would agree that that's not an appropriate use of taxpayer funds.
Yeah, it only sounds salty because of the timing. But at the end of the day, he's absolutely justified in vetoing that. And it'll be interesting to see what else he uses that pen for these coming years, because he's got like 3 years left on his term. So he's got a long governorship ahead of him here in the state, and he's just getting started and he's back home. So we'll see what he does.
Yeah. Some people were saying like, oh, he's trying to save face by dropping out early, you know, to maybe run in 2028. I think that's far more likely. I don't think Trump will pick him as a VP for reasons we've discussed on this show already. But I also don't think DeSantis would say yes.
Yeah. At this point, I think he's kind of a proud man, and he did kind of go against Trump on quite a few topics that I think that he was like betting on helping him get a little bit farther ahead in the presidential race. So I just don't think that even that face value, it just doesn't seem like a good matchup. And if he can just come back to Florida and do what he did that made everybody really like him and pay attention to him, he might have a better chance in 2028 than he did this year.
I agree. All right. Well, you go have fun with our mother while she's down there enjoying the beach. And as Nicole said, just living her best life in retirement.
She really is. And I owe her a better vacation than the last time she was down here when she spent the whole month in the hospital with me. So we're going to go down to the Keys this weekend and enjoy some sunshine and margaritas.
Good. Yes. Very, very much better than the hospital situation we were in. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Very much better. Wow, I'm like Miranda on that one, just making up phrases. Very much better. I hope they have a good trip down there and no one goes to the hospital, because my mom does deserve a nice trip to Florida that doesn't involve sitting in the ICU. So I love it. I love that for them. And Nicole's like, she's just living her best retirement, just loving life. She was just in Texas at the border, actually, but it must have been a nice part of the border. Like her aunt. Yeah, so my mom's sister retired down to the border like a long time ago. And so my mom's mom has since passed away, but goes and visits at the border. So she's got a nice little tan going on. Anyway, all right. The capital gains, the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax, as you know, was certified by the Secretary of State this week. And that could have huge implications. I mean, you know, Democrats are going to paint it as, oh, these are rich people trying to get out of paying their fair share. But there are certainly implications to having a tax on capital gains, not to mention that it is unlawful in my opinion, but who am I, right? I'm just a lady with a podcast. So I thought I would ask our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital about the tax on capital gains and, you know, where it goes from here. Before we get into what I want to talk to you about today, which is capital gains and the capital gains tax, we should note that you have your first risk management webinar of the year coming up actually in just like 2 hours. And I'm sure the advice gets deeper than don't gamble your money away. It's like the high level, right? Can people still sign up because it's at 3:30?
Yeah, they can. And the reason we started doing this during COVID, and then we've kept doing it just basically from popular demand. It's a really low commitment way, right, to get in and see what it is that we do. What do we mean by risk management? Can we really do the things that we talk about, right? How do we do those things? What does that look like? How have these portfolios performed? What do they cost? You know, all that. If you want a 30,000 foot overview of who we are, what we're about, what we do and how we do it, and most importantly, what makes us different, because I think one of the things that people sit out there, they think is, oh, it's all the same. You guys, we're really not, guys. We're one of the few firms out there that actually are active managers that have traders and analysts on staff and do our own research and all that kind of stuff. Why? We personally believe that, you know, I'm not spending all that extra money because I think it's fun. I'm spending it because I think that we're in crucial times, and we're going to spare no expense, and we're going to spare nothing that we can control on our end. Are we not going to, you know, pull the lever on and spend that money to try to create the best outcomes possible for our clients? And, you know, it's not going to happen every year. Obviously, we're not going to beat the market every year, but we've developed a really good track record. And I think we can show over time, you know, this is how we can actually improve your retirement returns, improve that over the long run, but drastically reduce your downside. Right, because these are crazy times we live in. So anyway, you tune into the deal. It's 45 minutes long. It's free. There's no obligations. Nobody's going to keep calling you. You're just going to have a good understanding of who we are, what we do, and how we do it. There's a Q&A session afterwards. I don't put any parameters on it. If you want to talk about China, if you want to talk about nat gas, oil, tech stocks, whatever the case may be, we do that as well. But yeah, and then if you're interested, you want to talk to us, then you set up a phone call with us, with me or one of our advisors afterwards. If not, you know, hopefully you leave more informed, and we wish you the best of luck. So great way to kick the tires with no obligations to become a client and not worried about somebody selling your information to some list or something like that.
Cool. So capital gains tax, I want to talk about this with you today because one, the initiative to repeal it has officially been certified. So either way, voters are going to vote on this thing in November. And so I don't see the legislature just on their own saying, okay, we'll repeal it. That's not going to happen. So it's going to end up in the hands of voters. But, you know, one of the reasons I want to talk to you about this is because a common retort to the people who want to repeal it is that why do you care? It's just the filthy rich people who are going to have to deal with this. You have a lot of different clients who are not all filthy rich. Describe the kind of client who's been impacted by the tax on capital gains.
Well, I mean, let's just put it into perspective, okay? So is somebody that's filthy rich retire with $1.5 million? Okay, $1.5 million plus Social Security on a sustainable withdrawal pattern, you know, that generates an income. $1.5 million saved for retirement plus Social Security generates an income of 90 grand a year, 95 grand a year. Okay. Is that filthy rich?
No.
Okay, so when you go to sell your house and you make more than 250 grand on the sale of your house, which guys, anybody that owns a house, are you right? Like there aren't a lot of people that could sell their house and make less than 250 right now on it. Right. So should those people be paying cap gains when they've been paying property taxes every single month? Cap gains for what? What are we paying cap gains for? Right? We pay taxes every single year to own it. We purchased the house with post-tax dollars, right? And now you're going to hit us with another tax because it went up. When one of the primary reasons it went up, including the rest of everything that I have to buy to live, right? The cost of living, it went up because of the idiocy and the moronic moves and strategies that you and your people have rolled out. So now I've got to foot the bill for that. It's insane. And I think a lot of these things, I'm sure that they'd love to have it. The Washington State Legislature, I'm sure that they'd love to have a state income tax, a state cap gains tax. They'd try to do it all. But another part of me is thinking that They're going to try to get as onerous and as, you know, confiscatory as they can possibly get on all things tax related, almost in an effort to create pain to get us to switch to an income tax.
Yep.
Right. Like, so,
yep.
So, hey, here, well, you know what? We can get rid of all these other taxes you guys don't like. Let's just replace it with an income tax. Like, I feel, I don't know, Brandy, you'd be more in the know, but that's what it feels like to me that they're doing, you know, it's highway robbery.
Highway robbery, indeed. Again, if you want to sign up for today in 2 hours, the Risk Management Strategy Live webinar that Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having, you can hear about what's happening with the market in 2024 and how to manage your risk. Yeah, and we have more. I might play from him next week on the chat about capital gains and kind of the slippery slope that we find ourselves in. Like right now, he's talking about real estate. So if it's your primary home that you're selling in Washington right now, the capital gains tax doesn't apply to you for your sale of your primary home. But one of the things that we've been seeing with the capital gains tax and what Democrats are already trying to do is lower the threshold. You know, they're like, oh, it's rich people. It's only rich people. But you let this capital gains tax through, it's not legal, it is not an excise tax, it's an income tax, and you're already seeing efforts from Democrats to make it apply to more people, and I would not put it out of the realm of possibility that one day they change it so it does apply to the sale of your primary home. And then, as Zach said, that would impact every single person. So we'll see what voters do with it. I kind of worry about the capital gains initiative because I know how Democrats are going to paint it as like only affecting the uber rich, and that's just not true. The implications of it are so much more than that. Okay, let's get to questions and comments, shall we? Bill Bays with $20 super chat. Typical Seattle. City pays $10 million to 2020 BLM protesters to make lawsuits go away. Much easier to settle with taxpayer money than to actually defend law enforcement efforts. Skynet Social Networks LLC says there is no question that every state has a right to secure their territory from criminal activity and foreign and domestic invasions. And if you're having, if the federal government is making it more difficult for you to protect and secure your state, that seems like a really challenging situation to put states in that is not in line with the founding of this country. Liz said, I wonder why we haven't gotten a ton of busloads of illegals up here. We have gotten some busloads of migrants. I mean, one of them, there's this big shelter at a church in South King County that's dealing with all sorts of issues. Aaron Fry says, I find it alarming that our government is more concerned about people coming here illegally than the safety of its own citizens. I have questioned a lot of Greg Abbott's decisions and often have wondered what he was thinking, but I actually respect him for standing up for the safety of Texans. And in doing so, standing up for the safety of the rest of us. On Jonathan Cho and his stories with two of the Republican candidates for governor, Jan Davis says, Brandi Reichert has a 34% voting record. He votes with the Democrats most of the time. We need Byrd. I don't even know if that's true, but I hear that all the time, and I genuinely hate that argument. I despise the vilification of Dave Reichert for being a moderate. I truly do. There's nothing I hate more than the phrase rhino. Like, the idea that a recalled school board member in a red district who wasn't able to keep his school board seat is going to be able to win statewide elected office in Washington is just... it's not happening. It's just not happening. I don't know what else to tell you besides that. And I would sure as hell rather have someone who would vote with Republicans most of the time than someone like Bob Ferguson, who will vote with Democrats every single chance he gets and will take this state down an even worse path than the one that we're on. So I just don't like the characterization of Dave Reichert as someone who isn't somehow like conservative enough for the state of Washington, as if what we need in order for Republicans to win is to be more conservative. On CHOP, Shelley Rose says, it really is unbelievable, makes more sense why the city announced a hiring freeze the day before. Yeah, I don't know how much insurance is going to cover the payout or whatever it is, but man, if you're just paying out all these lawsuits like candy because you do so much dumb stuff, CHOP never should have been allowed to happen. The riots never should have been allowed to continue for as long as they did. And then taxpayers are the ones who pay for it. Greg Olakis says the protesters should be paying the city triple for all the chaos they caused. I agree. Erica Dorning of the claim that these protesters are now suffering from PTSD. She says, I have PTSD diagnosed from an event that was no fault of my own. I get so mad when they claim PTSD when they brought it on themselves. Also, would they happily pay out if it were a right-wing protest? Not a chance in the world. Like, not a chance in hell. And the media would cover it so much differently. so much, like if it were one of those anti-lockdown sort of things, and there was pepper spray or munitions used or whatever it is, like you really think the city would be like, oh, just give them $10 million to go away. Not a chance in hell.
Really quick, I just want to say, based on that 34%, because we do hear that often, people keep throwing that at us, and I just want to clarify that that's a rating given by the Heritage Foundation, and it's how they would vote compared to how he would vote.
Yeah.
So it's not every Republican, and I would encourage you, they list all of the things that he doesn't vote and does vote with them on, and I guarantee most of the important stuff you probably agree with.
Yeah.
And then some of it is like raising the debt ceiling and things like that, where it's like you're in a position and you have to make a decision what's best for the country, and it might not be what you want for the country or whatever it is, but I encourage you to go look at the actual votes. And
it's a totally misleading statistic, and it's also being pushed by a camp in Semi Bird that he doesn't have a voting record to be able to criticize. And when you look at, as much as we talk about disagreements between the two parties, the vast majority of bills in Olympia, like something like 95%, are passed on a bipartisan basis, because the vast majority of them aren't controversial. So when you look at like Dave Reichert's voting record with Democrats, there are a chance that a lot of other Republicans also voted with Democrats on some of those issues, because a lot of things that happen are done on a bipartisan basis and are just a matter of course. We just talk about the controversial stuff. So that kind of stuff just bothers me, because I gotta say, like, Semi Bird's camp has really riled people up to believe all these bad things about Dave and like push those narratives. And, you know, they're out on social media pushing a Twitter poll that shows that Semi Bird has 52% and Bob Ferguson has 3%. And he's pushing it out there as if he's like, this is a poll that isn't bought and paid for. Yeah, it's a Twitter poll from the Yakima County Republican Party. That's not an accurate Twitter poll. And you don't have any money left. So if you don't have any money as a gubernatorial candidate, I have a hard time believing that you actually have 52% support. Adorable Deplorable says...
Just threw this in there.
A $5 super chat. Small donation just to see if both of you girls can say Irish wristwatch quickly. Iris, is it going to be one of those things where if I say it quickly, Irish it sounds like some sort of racial slur?
I hope not.
Irish wristwatch. I can't, but I'm still taking your $5. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? I feel like I made enemies on the show today. Love you guys. I love you. I love you guys. I do. And you know what? Apparently the chicken check thing is still happening. This is unreal. And it shows Bob Ferguson does not care. The man genuinely does not care. We have been tracking this chicken check debacle where he's sending these checks that are supposed to be going to the lowest of the low-income Washingtonians, like as part of an antitrust settlement payout. And instead, they're going to dead people, like people who in some cases have been dead for decades. And a lot of them are going to people who make way too much money to be considered 175% of the federal poverty line. We just got another email. This is the third this week from people who, I just heard from a lawmaker who was like, oh, just got my chicken check. Randy says, I'm fortunate to live in a household with a combined income of $200,000 a year. Fortunately, my $100 chicken check just came in. Whew, food bank donation coming up. Even when it has been pointed out by multiple outlets that the rollout of those checks was botched, that the checks are going to people who should not be getting them or people who cannot cash them because they're deceased, you're telling me that Bob Ferguson's office has decided to continue to stay the course and to continue to send those checks out using the same method that has been proven to be a complete failure? That is the definition of insanity. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Is it Thursday today?
It is.
It is. So we have a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up, and it's an emotional one. We're going to speak to a state lawmaker, Jenny Graham, whose sister was killed by Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, and she's going to react to that bill that would let people like Gary Ridgway get their right back to vote, be able to serve on a jury, be able to run for office. We're also going to take a deeper dive into a story that had all of us emotional this week, and that is a state law on the books right now that makes it more difficult to take a child away from a drug addict. This comes after a three-week-old was left dead in a bush by his father. So it's going to be an emotional show on Sunday, but we're going to really talk about the true impact that these policies have on people's lives in a very personal way. Also, I'll see some of you at Roanoke this weekend. If you're heading out to the coast, Nicole and I will be there. My sweet husband will be there. We'll be having a booth at Roanoke at the conference. I think you can register day of if you just want to walk in. We'll be selling our merch. We also have a restocked red hats strictly for Roanoke. We'll let you know if we have extras after Roanoke. So a lot going on. But sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Help us. I think this is a good pitch. You can support our show for the entire election year of 2024 for $57. The entire election year, $57 right now. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. You get 2 months for free when you sign up for a year. All right, see subscribers on Sunday. Sundays with subscribers. See the rest of you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.